Tonight I'm going to talk about presence. And I'll start just asking, consider, how present are you in your life? Are you there when your life is happening? For example, any food that you had today, did you really taste it? If you went outside, did you hear bird songs? Did you notice the breeze and how it was moving leaves and grasses? Were you there when life was happening today? Thich Nhat Hanh says, if you miss the present moment, you miss your appointment with life. This is very serious. And in so many ways, it is such a privilege and such a gift to be alive. And so important to be here for it. Now, of course, we live in a culture that just completely distracts us and offers, distraction on top of distraction. And so, it's sad. I think there are many people who get to the end of their lives and it's like, what happened? Suddenly I'm 90 something. I'm in a nursing home. Where'd my life go? This sort of thing. Lots of parents talk about, their kids are going off to college. Where did their childhood go? This sort of thing. So important to be present with the gifts we have. And so what exactly is presence? I've been thinking about this over the past week. And I'll say that I was struck by there's a writer, David Riccio, who writes about relationship. And he talks about the five A's in a healthy relationship. Attention, acceptance, affection, appreciation, and allowing. And of course, I think any romantic relationship in which both parties are practicing all five of those would be a very healthy relationship. Now, affection is something a little more specific to very personal relationships, romantic relationships, friendships, even parent-child. So we'll put that one aside, but the other four really are qualities of presence. Attention, acceptance, appreciation, and allowing. And so we'll start with attention. It's something I think I've said before in these Dharma talks that, again, this is such a distracted culture. We have kind of a poverty mentality around attention. And it's just this bare minimum bar of, is someone paying attention or not, And it means that we often don't pay attention to the qualities of attention, the depth of attention. For example, what it is for someone to listen with their head versus listen with their whole body, and it feels very different. I often say that I regard it as one of the fundamental insights of Buddhism that there's this profound link between attention and happiness. And it's something very underappreciated in this society. It's as if Buddha comes along and says, well, you want to be happier? Learn to pay attention. This sort of thing. And ultimately, there's a connection between attention and vitality, When I start to pay vivid attention to the world becomes alive. The world becomes vital and interesting and fascinating and engaging. When I'm wrapped up in myself, not paying very good attention, then I, chances are very good, I live in a flat, dull, lifeless world, you know? And it's almost this paradox, you know, when you're in that place of, well, why should I bother to pay attention to any of that? It's flat, dull, and lifeless, you know? But the truth is, the more I can pay attention to what is not myself, the more alive the world becomes. And ultimately, with a deep level of inner stillness, that kind of attention, there is a kind of radiance that opens up in the world. The poet Gerard Manley Hopkins says, "There lives the dearest freshness deep down things." And it's really about paying close enough attention that we can start to taste that freshness. And so part of presence is attention, but I think part of it is also appreciation. Appreciation is very close to gratitude. Appreciation is recognizing the good things we have, recognizing, you might say, the gifts we have all around us in life. And it segues very nicely into gratitude, having gratitude for all the gifts we have around us. Because if I'm in a mode of paying attention, but I'm finding lots of things wrong or lots of things to complain about, you know, that doesn't lead me to presence at all. But appreciation and gratitude open me up to presence. And the challenge of appreciation is really to fight the mind's tendency to take stuff for granted. You know, so easy to take so many things for granted. You know, the health of our body, you know, the fact that I have sight, hearing, ability to walk, you know. Do I appreciate that? You know, I'd be really bummed if I lost it. Do I appreciate it while I have it? You know, do we appreciate the people we have in life? Do we, you know, appreciate even the simple things, you know, the smell of fresh air, you know, this kind of thing. And just, you know, even just having a gratitude practice is, you know, it's one of the easiest things we can do to increase, you know, to enormously increase our happiness. Because, of course, the more gratitude I have, then I'm walking around in a world full of gifts. And that by its very nature, cultivates a kind of openness, which is part of presence. And part of presence also is accepting and allowing. Those two kind of dovetail well with each other. Accepting and allowing. You know, accepting life to be as it is, allowing life to be as it is. You know, first of all, just say our ordinary surrounding, you know, our living space, maybe our neighborhood, you know, and it's natural, you know, it's so natural that for all of us, you know, the mind likes to divide things into, you know, this is the stuff I like, this is the stuff I don't like. And so anything, you know, chances are our living situation is checkered with, you know, here are the things I like about it, here are the things I don't like about it, you know, that kind of thing. It's just such a natural tendency of the mind in dukkha. Part of presence is accepting all of that, allowing all that to be as it is, you know, allowing the things that I like and the things that I don't like simply to be as they are. Accepting other people and allowing other people in our lives to be who they are. There's something transformative that happens when we simply accept people as they are. Really to accept someone as they are and allow them to be who they are, in a way, is to extend an invitation to their best self. Now, it doesn't mean that invitation is always received. You know, there are some people that are enormously cut off from their best selves, you know, but many good-hearted people really do rise to their best selves when they're simply accepted for who they are. And probably the hardest and the deepest part of presence is to accept myself as I am, to allow myself to be as I am, exactly as I am. And acceptance and allowance are ultimately profoundly healing. You know, the wounded places in me, you know, insofar as I push them away from me, I'm making them stronger. Insofar as I accept that I allow them, well, initially that might be uncomfortable. I'll have to feel what's there and feel through it and process it. But that's precisely what allows them to heal. That's part of the cycle of healing. And so if I can pay attention and really develop a deep silence, and so I'm cultivating kind of a deep bodily attention, and combine that with appreciation for all the gifts around me, combine that with acceptance and allowing toward the outer world and the inner world, then that really allows me to taste life at a very deep level. And it's funny, this metaphor of tasting life. I'll just say that sight and hearing are sometimes called the physical senses. Taste and smell are the chemical senses. Evolutionarily, taste and smell are much, much older than sight and hearing. And they really are wired into much more primary parts of us, you know, our primary emotional selves. And it's a good metaphor in the sense that when we're really fully present, really our deepest emotional selves are in touch with the vitality of life. Now, I want to go back and clarify something about attention, acceptance and allowing, you know, acceptance and allowing the world, you know, and the question might arise, you know, does that mean that I accept and allow injustice and racism and exploitation of the poor and all the horrible things that are out in the world? And it's subtle. I would say no, but I think the tendency is people see the problems in the world and they want to go and solve them before they come to peace in themselves. And so they're in an agitated or anxious state and they're trying to contribute something to the world. People who bring presence, deep presence to these problems, make the most profound changes. I think we forget that both Dr. Martin Luther King and Malcolm X were men of tremendous presence. Medgar Evers was also, unfortunately, Medgar Evers was shot very early in the game. But the three of them were men of extraordinary presence. And that's part of their impact. When we are present, we have a vital healing impact on those around us. And the world desperately needs that. It desperately needs people who are deeply present. It's the hunger that no one even realizes what the hunger is, but it's such a deep hunger. And a person in deep presence, how can I say this? We live in a society that is word drunk. We're so convinced of the value of words and the importance of saying it. And if I say it and it doesn't seem received, then I'll say it again, or I'll say it louder, or I'll find a different way to say the same thing. You know, we're so convinced of the truth of our verbal formulations. Presence is a profound statement. And just the few words spoken by the person in presence land much deeper than, you know, tons of jabber, jabber, jabber from the person who is not centered. I'll share a Zen story, which I think I've shared once before in a sangha. Ryokan lived, I think, in the 18th century. He was a bit of a rascal in the Zen tradition. But he devoted his life, Ryokan devoted his life to the study of Zen. One day he heard that his nephew, despite the admonitions of his relatives, was spending his money on a courtesan. Inasmuch as the nephew had taken Ryokan's place in managing the family estate and the property was in danger of being dissipated, the relatives asked Ryokan to do something about it. And so here was, you know, a situation, a family situation, but a wrong that needed to be set right. Ryokan had to travel a long way to visit his nephew, whom he had not seen for many years. The nephew seemed pleased to meet his uncle and invited him to remain overnight. All night long, Ryokan sat in meditation. As he was departing in the morning, he said to the young man, "I must be getting old. My hand shakes so. Will you help me tie the string of my straw sandals?" The nephew helped him willingly. "Thank you," finished Ryokan. "You see, a man becomes older and feebler day by day. Take good care of yourself." Then Ryokan left, and never mentioning a word about the courtesan or the complaint of the relatives. But from that morning on, the dissipations of the nephew ceased. You know, just that idea that someone, you know, of course he was meditating all night, so he spoke those words with tremendous presence. And just the simplest words spoken with presence can be life-changing. So at this point, I'll share the quote sheet. From good old Henry David Thoreau. "You must live in the present. Launch yourself on every way. Find your eternity in the moment." Ramana Maharshi said, "Grace is ever present. All that is necessary is that you surrender to it." Thomas Merton said, "You do not need to know precisely what is happening or exactly where it is all going. What you need to recognize is the possibilities and challenges offered by the present moment and to embrace them with courage, faith, and hope." Thich Nhat Hanh said, "The most precious gift we can offer others is our presence. When mindfulness embraces those we love, they will bloom like flowers." And it is so much so true. If we, you know, if I become more present, become and cultivate presence, that is the greatest gift I can give to everyone in my life. Peter Matthiessen said, "We're mired in the relative world, never lifting our gaze to the mystery. Our life is stunted, incomplete. We are filled with yearning for that paradise that is lost when, as young children, we replaced it with words and ideas and abstractions, such as merit, such as past, present, and future. Our direct, spontaneous experience of the thing itself in the beauty and precision of this present moment." The Jungian Marion Woodman said, "Healing depends on listening with the inner ear, stopping the incessant blather and listening. Fear keeps us chattering, fear that wells up from the past, fear of blurting out what we really fear of future repercussions. It is our very fear of the future that distorts the now that could lead to a different future if we dared to be whole in the present." Maya Angelou said quite simply, "Be present in all things and thankful for all things." Pema Chodron said, "The most heartbreaking of all things is how we cheat ourselves of the present moment." Jack Kornfield said, "There's a sign outside a casino in Las Vegas that says, 'You must be present to win.' The same is true in meditation. If we want to see the nature of our lives, we must actually be present. Awake, aware. I love that. And of course, Jack would be just the one to see a song like that and see the deeper wisdom in it. Eckhart Tolle said, "Most humans are never fully present in the now because unconsciously they believe that the next moment must be more important than this one. But then you miss your whole life, which is never not now." He also said, "When the present, whatever the present moment contains, accept it as if you have chosen it. Always work with it, not against it." Sharon Salzberg says, "The simple act of being completely attentive and present to another person is an act of love, and it fosters unshakable well-being." Alex Gray says, "Share your presence with others. No boundaries, completely, openly, lovingly. Love is what makes us alive." Tara Brock says, quite simply, "Presence is the essence of true refuge." You know, we look for all these ways to be safe in the world. And in fact, being present, that in some sense is the deepest safety we can have. David White said, "I realized that my identity depended on how much attention I was paying to things other than myself. When there was very little attention to things other than myself, I was caught up in my own difficulties and resentments and the way I wasn't being looked after in the world. The way I wasn't being looked after in the way that I should have been looked after and kept in the manner that I should be accustomed to. And there was no one there. And there was no one to be found. As soon as I started paying attention to something other than myself, there was actually a surface area that was meeting another surface area." Arjuna Ardod said, "The first thing you discover is a kind of emptiness, a silence, a presence which doesn't seem to have content in it, like looking up into a limitless sky. That boundaryless place inside you is your consciousness, your awareness. When you relax into it, you realize that it's also full. It's everything. You realize this presence is what you really are. Love." Jaggi Vasudev said, "Your intelligence is so deeply entangled with the social identification that you've taken on, your brains are not working in line with the life you have. It is working against your life. This is the source of misery." He also said, quite simply, "How aware you are is how alive you are." David Ulrich, the photographer, said, "Moments of real seeing are beyond the labeling propensity of the mind, beyond what we think we know. Seeing is a step into the unknown and requires a degree of intention and awakening. Real seeing of ourselves, of others, of the world, contains three defining characteristics: simultaneity, a direct perception in the present moment; objectivity, seeing things as they are, as best we can; and impartiality, freedom from judgment. For most of us, governed by our subjective attitudes and cherished opinions, such moments of direct perception are rare and depend entirely on our state of mind, feeling, and body. But they are possible. Most of us have experienced moments of inner accord in which, by chance or intentional effort, we are open, sensitive, and wholly present." And finally, Jerry Wick says, "If we learn to keep our minds quiet through meditation, just stay present with our feelings, to connect with our heart, to let go of the storylines, and to directly feel all the unpleasant sensations associated with our emotional hurts, then the heart will open and we can approach each situation from a wider perspective."